The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, this week is Paediatric Sepsis Awareness Week. The HSE is urging people to be aware of its signs and symptoms, given the critical danger it can pose. And it's particularly timely, given the inquest of Aoife Johnston that is currently underway. As you know, 16-year-old Aoife died in University Hospital Limerick as a result of sepsis. Now, joining me is Dr. Martina Healy, Consultant Paediatric Intensivist at Crumlin Hospital and HSE Critical Care Lead. Good morning, Martina, and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, it is particularly timely, as we said, and I don't know how rare or how common sepsis is. Perhaps you'd give us the landscape.
Well, first of all, could I offer my deepest sympathy and condolences to Aoife's family? And there is not very much else I can say about that. So the incidence of sepsis in children is actually quite rare. So we have less than 1,000 cases a year of sepsis. So obviously we have millions of infections. And one of the things that we want to talk about and highlight is how you differentiate infections when they become a life-threatening septic episode.
Because kids have so many issues, you know, sniffles and coughs and temperatures. And so, you know, you don't want people to catastrophize everything.
Exactly.
Otherwise, EDs will be overwhelmed.
Exactly. So what is sepsis? Sepsis is a life-threatening complication of an infection. So you have to have an infection to develop sepsis. And even more serious is septic shock. So there is a difference between the three different types of infection. So an infection is, say, children get viruses, urinary tract infections, chest infections. So how do we know when that becomes life-threatening? So the sepsis program has developed a whole series of guidelines, particularly in children. And children are particularly difficult to differentiate between high temperatures and sepsis and septic shock. So for that reason, we have developed a series of red flags.
Okay, now before we go there, let's talk about sepsis itself. What is happening in the body? I mean, I'm under the impression it's bloodborne, and therefore, how does that infection get into the blood?
Okay, so it can be from something really innocuous like a cut or a chest infection or a urinary tract infection, or if children have other complications like, say, oncology, immunosuppression and so on. But just to go through how it presents in children, really. So the majority of children who present with sepsis in Ireland are less than 1 year old. You get a peak in that group. And there's also a peak in adolescence. So it's important, particularly in those two groups, to have our red flags and our education and training.
Now, do we know why those two particular groups are susceptible?
Well, in the newborns and in the first few months of life, their immune system probably isn't as well developed as in adults. And in adolescents, it can be quite difficult. They've got very robust physiology. And so to differentiate between just a bad infection and what's developing into sepsis can be quite difficult. And for that reason, we've developed the guidelines and the red flags.
OK, so let's talk about a parent deciding we must go to the GP, or this is so bad, we must go to the ED. What are those guidelines?
So I think, first of all, parents are really good at discerning when their children are sick. They are the guardians and we should be listening to them. So I think a lot of parents will have children with high temperatures. They look awful, but usually over a period of 24, 48 hours with paracetamol bringing down the children, they're actually beginning to get better. They're feeding, they've got wet nappies, there's no vomiting, no diarrhea. So the group that the red flag should be raised on really are the ones who are not getting better. So in day 2, 3 of the illness, they're still sleepy, drowsy. Certainly the onset of seizures would be, very much trip to ED straight away.
Now, seizures can be brought about by high temperature.
And about meningitis and infections of the brain and so on. So in that group where they're just not getting better, unable to take a bottle, they're not drinking, they're not eating. And that is in the infant age group. In the older age group, the red flags are probably more difficult. But for example, if your teenager is still, say, on the couch 2 or 3 days into the infection, they don't look well, they're not getting better. They say, look, I feel I'm going to die. That is often a really big red flag in the older age group. Maybe need to be helped to the toilet or haven't passed urine, all of those.
So not passing urine is definitely
a red flag. Over a period of 8 to 12 hours.
And so you've got to monitor the teenager because they toilet themselves.
Yes.
But the baby, the nappy will be the
wet
indicator.
Nappy. Absolutely.
Now, what about rashes on the skin? Because we're often told with meningitis, you take a tumbler, a glass tumbler, and you press down on the rash. And if it does not disappear, that's a red flag.
It was really interesting, Pat, when I started doing intensive care in Crumlin back in 2000, we would get about 14 to 20 of those patients a year, and it was meningococcal meningitis. That has practically disappeared because of the vaccine and because of a really good awareness program among parents about early recognition of rashes. So the majority of infections do not produce a rash. So one of the ones that does is meningococcal meningitis. And obviously, if there's any sign of a rash, it's very much a red flag.
And does sepsis produce a rash?
So it can produce a rash, but it may not. Depending on the cause of the infection and the cause of the sepsis, it may or it may not. So in you should look out for a rash, but it may not be there.
Now, you have developed for clinicians a series of steps, a 1, 2, 3, and it's graphical, but maybe you talk us through
for the treatment.
Because even an experienced GP might have difficulty in saying, go to the ED, because they know life in the ED is not pleasant. So you might hesitate. And when it becomes critical that you say, yes, take your child to the ED.
So take your child either to the GP or the ED. Now, GPs are really good. If somebody rings up and says, I think my child has sepsis, they pretty much be seen straight away. But if you have any doubts about that, go straight to the ED. And what they would normally do is GPs may not administer IV fluids. Some of them may, but that would be number one. You take a blood culture. So you like to isolate the organism before you give the antibiotics. But obviously, number one is IV or IM antibiotics if you're not able to get an intravenous line in.
Yeah. So for the GP then, they're pretty good at saying you've got to go to the ED, or they might start the process if they're capable of doing it themselves.
And we've had a few children who the GPs have administered IM antibiotics and have literally introduced life-saving treatment in a child with sepsis. Yeah.
Now, talk to me about knowing which antibiotics to use, or is there a broad spectrum that will always work against sepsis?
So there are a number of infections we know from the community acquired infections that there is a very clear guidelines on what and which antibiotics to use. And our infectious diseases and microbiology colleagues have developed these. So there's very much a community-acquired in sepsis versus hospital-based infections. And there are very clear guidelines available to doctors for this.
So it's not a question of having to send the blood to be cultured in the lab to find out what's there.
No.
There are things you could do straight away.
So, for example, a chest infection, there would be a different set of guidelines to a urinary tract infection to a bowel infection. And they would be very much known by all clinicians.
Now, we played a little clip earlier saying that it's hard to diagnose, and if it's not diagnosed until later, it's hard to treat. But if you do get that early treatment, how quickly do people recover from sepsis?
So from sepsis itself versus septic shock. So septic shock is moving into organ failure and irreversible shock. And that is what we want to, under all circumstances, try and avoid. So the recovery from sepsis in children is usually quite rapid. Well, depending on what type of sepsis it is and if they're previously fit and well. So our length of stay in ICU for a septic child would usually be between 5 to 6 days. In adults, it's certainly longer. And adults with compromise and other comorbidities, obviously, it may take even longer.
But it's still, that is a significant time
very
in intensive so. Care for a child, five
very
or six days,
so.
Which gives us some indication of the seriousness of it. What is the development time from maybe the moment the infection gets into the bloodstream before it begins to become evident to a parent, for example, or a GP?
So it may, depending on, again, on the cause, with a cough and a cold, obviously it starts straight away and becomes evident. But with other things like a cut or with a hidden infection, it may take 1 to 2 days. So often, you know, you institute things like paracetamol, Nurofen and all the usual things if your child has an infection. But I think the real key is, for example, they're not getting better. And a urinary tract infection can be hidden until you actually go to the doctor. They take take a sample and it's obvious that there are white cells in the urine and so on. So the timeline can be between 1 and 3 days. In some types of infection, like meningitis, it can be overwhelming within 12, 24 hours. So, you know, the red flags are really important.
The difficulty, I suppose, particularly as we're hearing the detail of the Aoife Johnston inquest and, you know, a university hospital Limerick being described as a war zone, that you're thinking, I've got a child here who's very sick, and particularly if I'm in the Limerick region, do I want to bring my child in there? I mean, isn't that the terrible dilemma, that you want to do the best for your child, but you're wondering, what is the best? Where do I go? What recourse do I have?
So, other than talking about that specific case, yeah, but the majority of people who are acutely and critically ill brought into ED are looked at straight away.
I mean, in Crumlin, for example, what happens?
They are triaged straight away to the resuscitation room. They are looked after immediately. They institute IV fluids, antibiotics immediately. They take blood cultures. And then if they're really, really sick, they call us. We're probably the next line with sepsis and septic shock. That would be the intensive care.
You
team,
as an intensivist,
yes,
you'd be,
yes,
called in at that point.
Yeah.
So the triage system in Crumlin, for example, if you come in and you know, you can't walk because,
yeah,
you've had a broken ankle at a football game or something, and then some child comes in with the temperature floppy,
straight into the resuscitation room and straight to IV fluids, antibiotics.
And that's what should happen.
And that's what should happen. And that's what should happen everywhere. And it happens in the majority of cases, Pat. Like the mortality rate for sepsis in children is quite low. It's 4%. And that data comes from our sepsis programs audit that they do annually. So we
it's
have
still 4 in 100.
Yes,
you know, so
yes,
it's not
so
to be
there,
ignored.
There are deaths from sepsis, but the ones we want to absolutely avoid are the group where you could have intervened earlier and you could have stopped the process and avoided sepsis and septic shock. Mm. And this is the reason for our education and our webinar today. There is a webinar that we're running, which is QPS Talk Time, where a lot of my colleagues from ID, ED are going to be joining in, and we're going to run an hour-long webinar that parents can join.
So how
and
do
ask
you access
questions.
That?
I think you access QPS Talk Time link.
QPS Talk Time link, and
yeah,
that will get,
yeah,
you. Now, some of the comments are coming in and questions. Can a low temperature mean sepsis?
Yes. So a low temperature in a child in particular is often a sign of low cardiac output. So in itself, a low temperature isn't a sign of sepsis. But if that's combined with a history of either a cough, a cold, not passing urine and all the other signs, floppy, drowsy, unable to wake up, yes, absolutely.
Can you answer this, whether a broad-spectrum antibiotic like amoxicillin would help as a very early stage treatment, say on your way to hospital?
So, again, it depends on the type of sepsis.
Have, the child has been on an antibiotic before, so they have a pediatric regime, not the adult amoxicillin.
Yeah.
Would you just give it as a precaution?
Well, I think you've got to be careful about giving antibiotics, sure, ad hoc. But amoxicillin would cover things like a urinary tract infection, but it may not cover all of them. And also, it can cover a chest infection, but again, you may have a different type of mycoplasma that isn't covered by amoxicillin.
A question: is sepsis a reaction to an infection or an infection itself?
So, sepsis is a progression of an infection into the tissues and into the blood. That's basically what it is.
How do you ensure you get checked for sepsis? Is it routine
in ED
when you go into hospital?
At the triage in ED, when you go into hospital, there are certain, like I said, red flags. We have developed a form and it is being used whereby they look for things like heart rate, blood pressure, temperature, all the things we've mentioned already. And they can take bloods and that can also, there are certain markers in the blood which will be high in the presence of sepsis.
Thank you for covering sepsis. Back in 1981, my mother died of sepsis, stroke, blood poisoning brought about from a cut. Her family didn't know of sepsis and tried to heal her at home. She passed a few days later. I was 7 years of age. Mm. Changed our lives forever,
yeah,
and not for the better. As your guest advised, if in doubt, get checked out. That's from Mark. Now, the availability of you know, a documentation, something you would print off the internet or anything for a parent. Is there that kind of guidance? You have the checklist at home?
Yes. So there is a website which is hse.ie/sepsis, and we spent 2 years uploading. There is a video for parents and there's a pediatric leaflet. You can print that out on your printer, and certain, the GPs can certainly order these leaflets, but parents at home, you can screenshot it and have it on your phone. So log into it, open it, screenshot it, have it on your phone. And if you're, I always say put it on the fridge. You know, if you're ever worried, run down through it and say, you know, my child is meeting some of these red flags. I might go and visit a GP or an ED.
Let us hope anyway, what happened in Limerick is anomalous and not typical and that their systems...
Majority of EDs, Pat, are absolutely on top of, you know, a critically ill person.
Now, I mentioned at the beginning you were an intensivist and we go back some way to my primetime days and you were looking to build an intensive care unit in Crumlin, but that was being poo-pooed because sure, won't we have the paediatric hospital around the corner?
So Pat very kindly was very much in our corner when we were trying to build our new ICU at the time, and we have a really beautiful state-of-the-art 17-bedded unit, thanks to your intervention at the time. And yeah, there was a lot of talk about the opening and so on.
And the point was that why would you build this? Why would you spend money on this when we will have a fantabulous ICU unit in James Street?
Well, as you know, we're still waiting. But, you know, the importance of putting in the proper workforce and workflow within the new units is really important.
That's going to be very difficult because you've got to keep the ship afloat in Crumlin and in Temple Street. All of these things have to continue while the new hospital is being opened. It's like trying to repair the 747 in midair.
But Pat, what's critical to the opening of the new hospital is the proper workforce being in place before it opens, and that we work with our models of care, which are clearly laid out as to which staffing should be in place before they open. And another thing we've learned, I suppose, because very few, there have been very few new builds in hospitals, so this is one of the first. The design of these new units very much affects the workforce and workflow. So it increases the amount of workforce involved in that design.
Depending on which way you design it.
Depending on which way. And it's not something that has been at the front of this because not very many new buildings have been built. So we are working to a workforce planning group to make sure that we have all of the nurses, doctors and all the allied staff who work in intensive care in place before it opens.
I remember going to see a broadcasting outfit who had several stations on the air simultaneously, and they had one technician in the centre and all the satellite stations were being run by that one technician, and the DJs and the presenters were doing their own thing within those surrounding rooms. That's the way it should be for intensive care too.
So for intensive care is very much direct vision of the patient. We should never lose sight of that. It's very much eye to patient. And when you lose that, you increase your workforce group that are required to run it safely.
And is that how it's going to be in the new hospital?
Well, that's the way all new hospitals are designed. So we have to work towards a workforce plan that actually is in place before we open those new units.
Yeah. Have you seen the design of the intensive care suites?
I have.
And is it based on that satellite model?
It's based on single rooms.
That's going to be very labour intensive, is it?
Well,
because you don't have size on it.
It's there now, so we have to put a workforce plan in place that will safely allow those children who are critically ill to be looked after.
So it actually means more people, doesn't it?
It means more people. And staff retention, particularly in nursing, is something that should be discussed a lot more, and it is a huge problem.
Yeah, because everyone thinks it's all about getting the bricks and mortar in place and putting the machines in.
No, it's not. It's about the people, Pat. It's about the people who look after these sick children and who need to be there at the bedside. That's what you go into hospital for, and that's what you should have, in the new hospital.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting topic, which we must discuss on the programme, the idea of how do you train people up for a new building, new systems
and design.
And keep going.
And design and how it affects workforce and workflow is a really interesting topic.
All right. Well, we'll come back to that. Dr. Martina Healy, consultant paediatric intensivist at Crumlin Hospital, HSE critical care lead, who's been telling us all about sepsis. Be aware to it. That's the main thing. And don't hesitate if you have suspicions there might be sepsis.
And I think that what we'd really like to reiterate to parents and to carers of the elderly as well is if you think there is sepsis, do not be afraid to walk up and say, I think this could be sepsis and it's life-threatening and I want some intervention here. Like, you are the best advocates for your children and for the people you look after.
Thank you very much for joining us. And I'm sure your intervention will probably save lives, just people listening now. Thank you very, very much, no Dr. problem. Martina Healy, consultant, paediatric intensivist at Crumlin Hospital, HSE critical care lead.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.